people who want to chime in, I'm going to tell why they want to go in. Ross, I really like the fact that what you sent as a message about how do you feel 30 years later about your time in service and what you've done. So we're going to go over that. But I want to remind everybody about this Monday at 4 p.m. Central Time. Me and John will be live at Ergo Flex. We're going to be on scene. We're going to show three machines that they have developed and they have out there that I think would be good in every VA clinic. And so, you know, Con Pearson, who is one of their sales reps, he is really helping me put this on. So I got to give him a lot of credit. And I also want to thank my producer because I'm put some stress on him, and I really appreciate everything he's done for me. This is hard work, but it's going to be a great podcast. And so tell your friends, tell your families, because this isn't only just for Gulf War vets or Desert Storm vets. I believe it will do stuff that most stuff can't do, that we've been looking for. You know, healing and, you know, and just getting us some of our life back. And I'm excited, man. Guys, I am excited. And so, and I think John knows how excited I am because we're going to have a long conversation this weekend. So, yeah. John, why did you join the military?
Oh, hell, you had to start with me.
Yeah. Put you on the spot.
Well, I joined because I knew that college wasn't for me at that point in my life, wasn't my thing. I really like working with my hands-on. I like shop. I like the construction idea. And so I was like, okay, well, it wasn't too much of a difficult decision for me the first time. So I went in for first time, and I asked to go over to Germany. I was going to Germany. They tried to send me to the West Coast, which I think would have been fine, but I had it in my head I wanted to go to Germany. So I went in because college wasn't for me at that time. I just wasn't my cup of tea. So on my first go around, that was the reason. The second go around, so I had a 1-year break in service. The second go around was I wasn't ready for civilian world. I was out for about a year, did a civilian gig, and it was very unappealing to me. It was like, okay, nobody give two shits about what I had to say. It was like a completely new world when you get out of the service. And I had just gotten married, and I was like, yeah, I wasn't ready for this. I wasn't ready for the go to work, come home, watch a little TV, go to bed, repeat the next day. I wanted more. And
you wanted more structure.
I knew I wanted to go. I did. It was really all about the structure because I really loved it. I made rank pretty quickly. I know there's people that got a little irritated, but all I did is what, you know, and I know so what a lot of people don't understand when you're in the military, it depends on what the military needs at that time, has a large part to do how quickly you might move up in rank. If your MOS or your job is saturated, might be harder to move up in rank.
Yeah, they close that crap.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So it was just the appeal of the structure and the organization. On the second go round, and I really wasn't ready for civilian world, so it wasn't too difficult either time, really. And my wife, I remember I left before Thanksgiving in 89, and I didn't see my wife again until February the following year. I went down to the.
Welcome back to Go For Side Effects. I'm sorry, everybody, we lost internet connection. We do not know what happened. It just shut everything down. It just was crazy. So I'm glad I'm back. Okay, so Tina kind of did a little recap do a little recap why you went in. And
I was coming out of a toxic relationship that wasn't exactly ending, and I was a small town girl with big dreams, and I got the hell out of Dodge.
With big dreams.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So what state did you leave for military from?
Oh, we should guess.
Oklahoma.
I was gonna guess because I already knew it.
Oh, really? So you're an Oklahoma girl.
Yep.
She's an Okie.
I'm a genuine Okie from Muskogee. I was born in Muskogee.
Okay, I was going to ask that.
Oh.
And now Wade?
Okay.
And now they do smoke marijuana in Muskogee. Last time I was
That's crazy. So, Wade, I know you were telling the story, but I want you to start over and because I think everybody should hear what mm-hmm. you were saying. Why'd you go in?
Yeah, so I joined at 17 on my 17th birthday, had to have my mother sign. I did basic training at Fort Benning the summer between my junior and senior year of high school. Came back, completed my senior year, and then left 5 days after I graduated for my AIT for infantry. And then that gave me enough credit hours to actually graduate high school. And then I tried college for one or two semesters, hated it, went and got the active duty recruiter and told them everything that I wanted to do. After talking to some prior service that were in my unit, I got what they call the hua hua bug. You know, I saw those wings. There was a couple guys that had been in Grenada, and all I wanted was that 82nd combat patch. You know, I that's what I wanted. And so I went, and he gave me everything I wanted in my contract.
That's
and so I stepped foot on Bragg. It was, I did reclass to 91 Alpha, which back then was combat medic. I went right back to an infantry battalion, which was great. I did my whole time at Bragg, I served on the line. I started as a platoon combat medic and then eventually worked my way up to senior line medic. So I got there June of 90, and I did what they call your cherry blast, which was your first jump in division. I did that the first week of August of 90. And then I found myself sitting in Saudi Arabia on the 20th of August of 90. Mm. So everything came fast and furious.
Hell no.
So I got to ask, okay, I'm curious because I don't know, what was it that attracted to you to be 11 Bravo? Help me understand.
Initially, when I signed up for the reserves as a 17-year-old, I didn't really know a whole lot of the difference. But when I got into it, you learn real quick, and I absolutely loved it. And, you know, back then, I had long hair. I had earrings.
Oh, you had long hair?
What?
Really? I had
hair down to my shoulders.
Well, it's gone now.
Shit. You were a hippie boy.
It is gone now.
And it was bad.
Okay, what's 11 Bravo for
that's your infantry.
Infantry.
Yeah,
you are crazy, man. Jump out of a perfectly good, airplane or a helicopter or whatever y'all chose to do.
You had to ask for that shit. That wasn't automatic.
No freaking way. Okay, so wait, when you first jumped, your first one, be honest with me. Did you almost pee yourself?
Okay, yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, Ken. I do you do your five jumps during airborne school? And that's enough to get you your wings.
Blood wings?
Oh, yeah. They can do blood wings now. Yeah, absolutely. Blood wings right here. Mm-hmm. Some people go on to a non-airborne unit, and they call them five jump chumps, or you'll go to an airborne
five
unit.
Five jump chumps.
and then you go on to jump.
No, yeah.
And people always laugh at me, but I always say every jump was a night jump, and they're like, "What?" Because I close my damn eyes every time I go out that door.
Man, I would have done more than that.
Well, they'll kick you out if you don't jump. If you freeze, right? They'll go ahead and.
Oh yeah, yeah. I in my lifetime, I saw one jump refusal. But yeah, if it's very rare. You're going out that door. I mean, you're gonna
go. Well, okay.
I'll go out like a cat dragging everything with me.
I'm telling you right now, you wouldn't be able to get me out the door. And no damn way on God's green earth am I going to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. I would have duct taped myself to the seat.
I would have done.
I don't know if military airplanes are perfectly good airplanes to begin.
Right. Now, I would have done the dope on the rope thing. In other words, air assault. I would have done that.
I thought about air assault. But I'm terrified of heights, and I changed my mind because when we had to do, we did an ammo lift, and we were up in a Chinook, and we were kind of having to, like, keep an eye on the ammo load that we had. I wasn't digging that at all, so that killed the idea.
Well, the reason
I went in
for two different reasons. First one was I did not want to cut hair. I didn't, even though that's what I do now. I did not want to cut hair. The way that I really went in is my woodshop teacher, who was a Vietnam veteran. He was one day standing there, and the Navy recruiter guy, he was a chief, and we all knew his wife because she drove a school bus. He said, "Kevin, man, you would make a good sailor." And David, who was the recruiter, was like, "You know, you would make a good sailor." My smart ass mouth had to say the one thing you should never tell another sailor. You bring me a good looking woman to sign me up, I'm in your Navy. Miss Slater, here comes Petty Officer Wolf. Hot. And she was a second class.
Her hands.
I said, sign me up. But they were really cool. They didn't lie to me. I went boot camp in San Diego in 89 in August. But, you know, and then, but I was one of the only guys who literally was allowed to go overseas. Because a lot of people go in the military, and this is why I want to bring this up. Back in the days, I don't know about now, if a judge tells you to go in, or prison, or Navy, they're both almost the same thing. And then, especially if you jump out of an airplane. the other ones there too is a lot of them don't have good home lives. You know, the kids were abused, and so they go into the military. And the other reason is because they have no real good education. And so they choose to go into the military to get better education. There is no way on God's green earth any college would have taken me. Out of 287 people in my class, I was number 286. Everything I did was, I don't know how y'all's level was M level, and then advanced level. I was below M. And so, I really was. I did not do good at school. So I said, I'll go in the Navy. I made a 28 or 26 on my ASVAB. A Army officer and an Air Force officer had to give me a waiver to go in.
So maybe you just weren't good at tests.
Oh, I was not. You're right. I wasn't good at tests.
Especially
the tests back then, right? They were very just not conducive to really testing your knowledge or your abilities. You were running against a clock all the time, and that can get in your head, right? And so I scored extremely high on the ASVAB. I scored extremely high on all of my tests. I was just really always able. It was a bad mistake because then I got pounced upon because I didn't know what the ASVAB was. I had no interest in the military. It was just another thing where they came in and brought you to the library and told you had to take this test, this standardized test. I'm trying to get into college, so I'm doing my best. And oh my gosh,
what did you score?
Like I was descended upon.
What did you score?
My GT was 113. So my GT.
I
could pick
GT
any job I wanted, but they talked me into some like jobs.
I believe my ex-wife scored a perfect score on the ASVAB.
Wow.
And
that's great.
Yeah. And then I scored a 28. No wonder why we didn't make it.
I had no idea what I scored.
I had no plans of going to the military whatsoever. I was going to law school. That's what my plan was.
Really? Mm-hmm. I could see you as an attorney. I really could.
I can't now. There's something about law school that changes the way their brains are wired.
Almost everybody who's listening right now, which I would like for y'all to chime in why you went to the military. But Most people who went in, there was a specific reason. You just don't go in the military for no reason. Like, oh, sounds good. I'll go into your military.
Kind of what I did. It was a way out. Like, they showed up on my doorstep. And the thing is my whole family was Navy. And it was the Army recruiter who got to me first when I was in that moment.
Shame
of like,
get me the hell out of you. Here. It could be two against two instead of three against one.
So here's a question for y'all. If you had to change something about, aside from the fact that you going in the Desert Storm, if you had to change something about your time in, what would you do different while you were in that you didn't think of, or you should have and you didn't think about at the time? What would you do differently?
Save money.
I would have done my research and chose a career path that translated into the civilian world a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I would have saved money.
I would have stayed the whole time. I see some of these dumbasses I served with, and I say that affectionately. And, you know, they're I see them. I see a kid now. I think he's at 32 years. He's getting ready to retire.
I know.
Oh, they get promoted so fast these days, too. Like, when we were in, it was a death crawl to get to E5, and you'd be on the PLD list forever trying to get into that so you could get that last bit of promotion points that you needed. And now then I'm like, what are you, 12 and you're an E9? Like, what is going on? It's crazy. But I guess
so they make rank quickly now, huh? So I think it was
Afghanistan. I think it was all that.
I have to say this. Jason, listen to what Jason put down. And then I'm gonna read Scott's. He said, I went in for all the reasons I found out I didn't serve for. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
The way everything is today. I mean, that's how I do feel now. I'm like, why did we serve for everything to be so crappy? I mean, and then Scott, he went in, like I said, escape abuse. You know, I mean, and
I think all of us had that thread of patriotism in us. We had to.
We all did, but...
You know, I mean, I think that was just our foundation. I don't think I thought, oh, I'm a patriot. I'm going to go... Yeah, maybe some people did, but for me, that was just part of who I was, and this made sense.
But what made people really patriotic? If you think about it, when we went in, what made you think of patriotic? I went in because I said I would if they brought me a hot girl. And I didn't. But
it wouldn't have been on your menu to consider if you didn't, like, if it was, they couldn't have made you go be work at some, like, place where you're doing something that was completely against your morals if it was a hot chick, I doubt, right? I think you had to have that belief in, you know.
But I learned to believe more whenever I went in, when I really started to understand, you know, what the American flag stood for. And then for what, I tell you the one thing I would change now more than anything after I got out. And Wade, you made a great point. I would have stayed in my 20. But the other thing I would have done is I would have went to my grandfather and my uncles. My grandfather was in World War II, and I would have thanked the hell out of them and my uncles. And I never did. Till this day, I think that would be a regret. Because
they were so quiet about it.
They were. I mean, you would have never known what they went through if they didn't have these shows on now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was Desert Storm a walk in the park? Not while I was in, because I was on a supply ship. It was work. We worked. And for what y'all went through is different than what I went through. But I only thing I would change, I would have stayed in 20 years. I loved it. I was a good sailor.
I would have stayed in 20 years, drank less tequila, and
No.
To control this mouth.
I'm telling you right now, I would have not stopped the tequila. Or the mojo, or the monkey on a stick.
When I went in my first duty station, I got handpicked because I'm a construction guy, and I come in and I didn't know it at the time, but the E7 that I happened when I came in, it was a headquarters detachment, and at an outpost kind of out in the middle of nowhere, kind of sort of. I mean, everybody came to work on that post, but they'd go home to, you know, Pioneer Concern, and I'd stick on Grosseheim, and it was like one barracks where there's, I don't know, maybe 60 of us. And if I had to do it all, of course, I, you know, I'm scared kid. I didn't know what the hell I'm doing. And it was a gravy 4 years that I had the first time. I mean, total gravy. All I had to do was barracks maintenance and a few odds and ends around the headquarters, salute the brass going in and out, which I didn't do once. And I had a colonel. I didn't really realize how to salute when I had a weapon in my hand. And I, oh, he chewed my ass because I didn't salute him. God, he was pissed.
That's
big ass. But outside of that, it was gravy 4 years. And so if I had to do it all, I mean, you know, one say, well, I would love to have gravy. But gravy's good, but you don't learn a whole lot.
Well,
you know, you just.
I mean, with that, John, I mean, I learned more in the. I think the military made the man who I am now. I mean, my mom and dad put the morals and values in me. The military just took it and structured it better. You know, and I do think that now, and everybody who I served with was great. I didn't have any issues with anybody I served with. The guys were, and the guys and girls, they were my besties then, man. I mean, we relied on them.
Whatever happened to the hot chick that you bought, that you rose your hand for?
Never saw her again.
Sorry.
I met other hot girls and everything. But I mean, now the other thing is too, is a lot of people when they go in, and I want to say this, they all have, most of them have girlfriends or boyfriends when they first go in. You know that is not going to last. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
And I broke a girl's heart and I feel really bad about that, especially now. I look back, I was like, man, maybe I ought to just send her a message and apologize. But
you
I'm scared.
Don't forget about you.
Yeah, well, I mean, wait, nobody forgets about me. What kind of freaking comment is that?
I don't mean that rudely. I just mean she went on about her life, and she has a life now, and you shouldn't feel guilty about that.
Well, I saw her 5 years after it. She was mowing her yard, and I stopped by to apologize. And I got, and she was married. I got a butt chew, and I ain't never got before in my lifetime.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Get her dirty, then. There's more to this story.
Yeah, you know, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was bad. I did wrong. I did wrong. And I do. I feel bad about it. But that's the path I chose. And the path led me to where I am now. And it's a great path. You know, great kids, great wife, you know. I have a great family all the way around. And I thank that for the military.
Where you're meant to be.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin, you and I had talked about it before, but like prior to leaving to get to go to Bragg, I was engaged. And then, you know, then this whole Desert Storm thing kind of threw a wrench into things. And then time and the brain and, well, long to cut to the chase, I still have a copy of the invitation to my wedding, and in one of the napkins that were going to be at the tables, that the wedding that never did happen. And but we were down to the last 6 weeks before the wedding, and called that off. And
he did.
I would say mutually, probably more me, and. It's the only thing that I'll ever in my life blame on my head.
But you know? That's thank you.
Not in your head.
Thank you. And that's the one thing about it. When I came home from Desert Storm, I was not the same. I was not the same guy whenever I left. And when I saw them, I got to be with everybody. I was miserable when I came home. I got back on the airplane. I went back and I was happy again. It was weird.
Yeah. I think it still exists to some point to this day. There's still like that part, like I get around y'all or when we do the Desert Storm Memorial thing and everybody's together or just even on the groups on Facebook, there's a connection I have with you guys and with all of the brothers and sisters out there that I don't think I'll ever have with my family. You know, I mean,
it is. Don't ever tell your spouse the best 4 years of your life was the military.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
well, unless they were there through it with you.
Well,
right?
I can tell you, I said that one day and I still don't live it down. But
are you a wild child in the military? I mean, maybe
no, I really and truly, no, not at all. I was well behaved. I worked my last year in, I made Junior Sailor of the Year Westpac. So, you know, I worked my ass
off.
I was focused. And, you know, but I couldn't have done it without any of them. I wouldn't, my friends helped build my structure. And so when I came back and now, you know, I'm married, I've been married for 22 years. And I accidentally one day said, man, the best 4 years of my life was the military. Luckily, my wife went to a reunion and she got to see me all around. She won't go to another one, she says, because it's different. She wants me to be with them. And one of the spouses told her, my husband said the same thing. It was the best 4 years of his life because it's a brotherhood, a brother and a sisterhood. It really is. It's different because you rely on them to survive every day. Yeah, you know, and when I talk to y'all, it is. It's just different for me, even with my family, because our connections is military. It's just something about it. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. It's almost go ahead, John.
No, well, I was going to make the comment. I know this was a podcast about what made us to join, but we can kind of do a two-part or two, you know, both ends of it. And I was like, as we're talking about what made us join, I was like, okay, then I start thinking about what made me get out. What was the deciding factor in me getting out? And the deciding factor for me getting out was I had two young kids. The only way I was, you know, if I reenlisted, they want to send me on unaccompanied tour to Korea. Now, my dad went to Korea during the Korean War. I wasn't ready for that. I had two young kids. I just wasn't ready for that. And I had just come from two units that they shut down because it happened to be during the Clinton years. So we got deactivated. They sent me to a unit that was deactivated. So I had that bad taste in my mouth. And I was like, no, I guess I'm done. So
When they close rate, when they close rate, that's one of the quickest ways to get people out.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know.
I can totally overlay that because, you know, first of all, there were some aspects of it. Like you leave, for me, I left thinking the military was going to do all this traveling. I was going to see the world, blah, blah. And then Desert Storm came and kind of messed all that up. And then, you know, nobody told me I was going to be doing police call and picking up the PX parking lot. Nobody told me, you know, I was going to be at the motor pool sweeping up sunflower seed husks from my NCO, putting them on the ground, right? You know, so, and I was kind of a little rebel spirit, so that wasn't really good for me anyway. So there was already that, but I did the same thing you did. When I got back from Desert Storm, you know, like a year later, I got pregnant and I was getting ready to give birth to my son. And I just got to thinking about how I saw so many mothers, you know, back then, 45 days, you're back on the clock and you better be able to pass the PT test, right? And they would deploy mothers 45 days after giving birth, which is a horrible thing for a child and for attachment and bonding. That's like a lifelong trauma for that child. And so I just knew I couldn't do it. Like if something happened, I couldn't do it. So that was why I got out.
So otherwise you're saying you didn't trust your husband to stay alone with your child too.
No,
because
now that is true. I didn't let him hold him for a long time, but I mean, I think that for me, it was just, I didn't like the idea, you know, the attitude, we didn't issue you a family. Right, you know, so it was disturbing to me, and I just couldn't see myself doing it, whether husband or not. You know, I just couldn't see myself being gone for a year, the first year of my child's life, or anything. So,
Wade? Yeah, I want to hear why Wade got out more than anybody. I don't know why. I want to hear what you did.
Back then, the combat medic was a short supply. So when you come to reenlistment, it's a PDA. And I had passed SFAS, but I was on up for reenlistment. But if I failed, if I could reenlist for SFA for special forces, but if that was a 4-alpha bonus back then, which was decent. But mm-hmm. if I failed, I'm right back to my same unit. Or I could reenlist PDA for the unit I was in. And that means permanent duty station. Mm-hmm. And I took an active guard reserve job back in Iowa. I thought, I'm going to go back to Iowa. I'm going to chill for a year and see what happens. And I rode that year out and I was done.
You never looked back. I was kind of
recruiter duty. That didn't come around. And I ended up I ended up having 7.5 years.
Well, mine is actually sad. So I had, they wanted to leave me on Guam for another 2 years to go to a sister ship, the USS White Plains. I was already on that type of ship for 4 years and on Guam, and I had island fever. And I was, you go through the war, you come back, you go back over there. I got married, and then I went through a divorce. And so towards the end of my 4 years, while they're trying to talk me into it, I was going through a divorce, and I just couldn't handle it. I just became lost and everything. So, you know, mm-hmm. and that's really the two reasons right there. Now, if they would have gave me what I wanted, I probably would have stayed no matter what. But I wanted to my whole goal going in the military was to become an FBI agent. And
really?
Yes. That was the only reason I went in.
I wanted to be an FBI agent.
I did, man. But I wanted to go after drug traffickers and stuff like that. And so I picked a place right up just north of here, not even an hour up north. And I was like, is there any way I can get that? Because the guy on my ship got that. And they work with the Coast Guard, the Air Force, Army, Marines. It's just a unit. And they go up and down out to sea and for drug smuggling and stuff like that. And that guy told me, hell no. So I said,
don't you have to be? So for me, they told me I had to finish my degree. And at that point, I had my son. I never could get back to get my bachelor's degree. And I'd already, at this point, shifted gears because I'd gone through so many years of crazy in that relationship. I wanted a psychology degree so I could figure out what the hell just happened to me. I was all the way down the road for a psychology degree. And they're like, yeah, you need to get an LE, a law enforcement type, you know, flavor, criminology or something. So I finally just said, well, screw it. I'm not starting over. So.
Well, I remember my twin brother was at a football game and I wanted to be a police officer. Be honest with y'all, a police officer. And what changed my mind, he was at a football game and he accidentally walked into a police officer and they tried to arrest him. And he was playing another football game and he was in uniform. They were excited that they won and he accidentally bumped. And I mean, it was pure
power
hell. It was. And my mom walked in that door and said, you will never be a police officer. I said, okay, I'll be FBI. Yeah. So I kind of switched gears. But the other way that I don't know about y'all, but having to tell your parents you're going into the military isn't as easy as you think it is when you're a mama's boy.
I bet.
I called my mom. When my older brother was going to go in the Navy. And my mom, boy, they bitch, moan, and groan. You know, well, when I went to go in, I was like, you know what? I'm going in. So I called her up, and I was like, Mom, guess what? I'm going in the Navy, and I hung up the phone.
No, you did.
Did
that
they?
Is wrong.
And
dude.
And then so when I let her get the madness out, I got out. I said, what am I gonna do? Well, I took the ASFAB, I scored like a 43 at first. Then I went back and took it again. She made me study.
Mom did.
Oh, yeah. She was like,
if you're going in, you're going to get a...
That's right. You're going to go do something. You better figure it out now. And I studied. I went back to test, made 74.
Nice.
If you make over 30 points on your ASFAB, they make you retake it again. Then they gave me this one, and I swear to God, it was Air Force because it was nothing about airplanes. What the hell does an 18-year-old know about
airplanes? That's
that
mechanical engineering section.
Right. And I got, that's how I got to 26. It's 26 or 28 I made. So I'll be fair. I did make 73 at once. I probably took the Army one.
I don't think there's like a different branch.
but no, I'm just kidding, everybody. But what was really cool about it was is when she realized I was really going in at this point, because I was up at MEPS and she knew they were giving me a hard time and all this. So she was like, he ain't going in. I said, you know what? I'm not even going to say shit because my brother was about to get married. I just got home. All the family's in town. So I knew she couldn't kill me. And I walked up. She goes, well, how'd it go? I said, I leave next week.
Wow.
She was not happy. And then when I went in military.
Yeah, I got to say, you really knew how to piss off your mama.
Well, man.
In there and then get you packed up and gone then pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I can't.
They gave me too much time to think about.
No. They as soon as I was done with MEPS, they were like, when do you want to leave? I was like, I better leave as soon as possible.
Well, they're having, I understand they're having such a hell of a that time right now. Getting people to go in. Wade, you mentioned you would have re-enlisted PDA. I certainly would have re-enlisted PDA when I was in Germany. So we were at a place called Wildflicken. Wildflicken, if you're a tanker or something, you hate it because that was a tank range. I mean, it was a beautiful place. They had beautiful long post housing for us. Everything was converted over to 60 hertz. So we had 110 to plug in. We didn't have to worry about conversion. And when I got back from the Gulf, I went straight back to Germany, and I turned right around. They sent me stateside to go to BNOC, and then came back and told me, well, the unit's shutting down, and then sent me to Fort freaking Gordon, which, if you like golf, great. I didn't give two shits about Fort Gordon. But they were deactivating that unit, too. Say again?
You got Leonard Wood and Gordon?
Yeah, well, Gordon would have been permanent party, but yeah, no, I mean, you're going to Leonard Wood if you're an engineer. I mean, that's just how it is. Leonard Wood was colder than son of a bitch. I'd be interested. I was just down in that neck of the woods where I went down to, you know, see my in-laws in Arkansas. But I mean, so PDA would have. I'd be curious if I would have been able to stay in. It'd be interesting to see where I would have, because I love Germany. I had a blast in Germany. Well, with the exception of drawing the short straw to go to play in the sand. I mean, other than that, I like Germany. You know, because I didn't piss my mom off or anybody.
I would have liked to actually got out and seen other parts of quote unquote the Army. You know, a lot of my cohorts, they left and ended up down at Fort Sam being instructors and cadre. And I'm like,
oh.
I just shake my head. I'm like, I'm thinking I would have been a mid to late 20s instructor at Fort Sam. Now, if you know anything about Fort Sam, Houston, they have a male to female ratio of about 6-1 female to male. So that's just, you know, kind of
gives
you.
Really?
Wait, where's this
really?
At?
Really?
Wait, where's this at? No, no.
Fort Sam, Houston. And,
yeah, where's that at located?
In Texas, in San Antonio.
Oh, in San Antonio. Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
6-1 women?
Yeah, it was going through school there. Going through medic class in the medic school there. That was quite interesting that we cannot put on the regular podcast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and well, another guy, so one guy I was talking to today about why he joined. And it was funny. He goes, man, when I joined, he goes, I did not want to be in the Army or the Marines during Vietnam. So I signed up as fast as I could because he knew his ticket was about to come up. And so he went in and he went into the Air Force.
Air Force,
I mean, think about that was a smart move. I mean, think about where the Army and the Marines were.
Right. Right.
I can't imagine. I even said this when I was out in the desert. Like, to me, it was scary as hell because there was nowhere to hide. I mean, there was nothing but I mean, you could see people, see bumps, see us in our green suits, because we weren't in those chocolate chippers forever out through there. And I thought, gosh, there's nowhere to hide. But then I thought about those that were in Vietnam and where there's just, you know, bad guy behind every leaf. You know, So I don't know. It was, anxiety was real.
After 9/11, most people joined because they're very patriotic. And they wanted to
take gas. A huge increase. Like you say, like patriotism.
They started kicking people out and like really like trying to making it really hard, like going through the eye of a needle to get in. And you had to have all these perfect scores and never have made a mistake in your life. Can't even have a speeding ticket. You know, that's when it got like that.
Our country right now, I don't know about how it is all in your neck of the woods. I mean, Wade, we're in the same state, but Tina, you're still in the working world. Kevin's in the working world. What do you guys see on your ends as far as how people feel about
they're things pissed.
as a world in our country? Not politically, just as a whole.
They're pissed. The way our country is right now, everybody's upset. Kids can't really even move out of their parents' house because you know they can't afford to, even if they got a college degree, because it takes two, and that's not the way it should be, that's what I see. I see people really upset and everything, but we're about to go into the after show. And we can talk more about that in the after show, because I think that'd be a fun topic. But everybody remember, March 4th, this Monday, 4 p.m. Central Time, tune in on our Facebook channel, because we will be live at Ergo Flex. And
nice.
Yes, I'm excited for them to show me how this equipment works that I believe should be in every VA clinic out there.
You're in a workout room, so if they want to donate, wants to.
Yeah,
to
I'm telling you, man. I mean, this stuff is really cool, and so I'm really excited about this, and I believe in the product. I mean, I've been studying it for about a year, and I have no skin in the game, financially, nothing. I believe this should be in every VA clinic for the vets. That's why I'm doing this, not for any other reason, because that question has been brought up and they were like, no, nothing at all. He just wants it in every VA clinic because it should be.
Well, I think that I'd be very interested to kind of see what it's about. And obviously he's small business, right?
Yeah, he's small business, hometown. God,
definitely avenues to get them connected to a small bit into the SBA.
It's in Conroe, Texas. Yeah,
contract with government.
That's where I want to go with this. But I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. I'm sorry about the internet interruption. Thank you guys for carrying it on for me. And we will see y'all next week. We're going into the after show.